coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us Colonel Ron Ray. Colonel Ray is a retired Marine Corps colonel, and he is involved in the defense of the right of the people, the cadets at the VMI, the Virginia Military Institute, to continue to have prayer. And you must understand that our military is under attack today by the Anti-Christian Lawyers Union and similar anti-American groups. For those of you who don't know, that's the ACLU. And they want to take prayer out of our military academies, out of our military institutions, because, of course, if you destroy the religious foundations of a nation and of their military, you destroy the nation. Colonel Ray, thank you so much for being with us.
Stan, it's always a privilege and a pleasure to be with you.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about the background of this attack really on our military, because this is really what it's all about. And, of course, they are really very, very successful. They seem to have a lot of help from the courts, this judicial activism, somehow finding justifications for anything that will allow them to attack the Christian foundation of our nation.
Well, first of all, let me just say that the prayer has been an essential feature of the American military going all the way back to before the Declaration of Independence, before George Washington was appointed as our first commander-in-chief. And the earliest prayer book I found in doing my research was American prayer book that was distributed to U.S. forces, American forces, the Continental Army, in this case was 1774. So it's a central attribute that military units, they do everything, they march together, they sleep together, they train together, they fight together, and they pray together. And that's been an essential part of that. And the suit was brought against VMI by the ACLU in Lynchburg, Virginia. This is a Virginia Military Institute, for your listeners that may not know, is the first state military college. The founding fathers, after the war for independence had been won, determining what America's national defense structure, establishment would look like. Of course, the Army and the Navy and what have you, and the Secretary of War and the Secretary of the Navy. But they encouraged at that time that every state would have a military college dedicated to training the militia officers in case they needed to be called into service, particularly national service or even in the state service. And VMI answered in 1839 by creating such a college, and it has a distinguished, unique history, a military history in America. The first corps of cadets, neither the Naval Academy, the Air Force Academy, the West Point, actually went to war. They actually went to war as a corps of cadets. Stonewall Jackson had been a professor there for a decade before the war between the states, and they fought a battle and actually won an engagement at New Market on May the 15th, 1864. So they have a rich in history and tradition, including prayer at mealtime and prayer at other significant times.
Man, I think when a man goes into battle, if he doesn't believe in God, why, he's not going to be a good soldier. He's not going to be willing to fight as he would. You have to have that belief when you go into battle. And
no
by
question.
Eroding that, you destroy the very effectiveness of our fighting forces.
Well, there's no question. George Patton, who was a great American soldier, got a first to complete year at the Virginia Military Institute before he matriculated at West Point. But he said, if you can't pray, you can't fight. And he looked, as all of our military leaders did, the leader led in prayer before he led in battle.
Okay, well, hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and with us today is Colonel Ron Ray, and we're talking about General Patton. We're talking about the importance of prayer in the military and the attack on our military and our military academies in an effort to undermine the very religious foundation that motivates men to be willing to give their lives in pursuit of an ideal. So why don't you tell us a little bit more, because I know that General Patton has played a very important part in this concept of the importance of prayer.
No question about it. I mean, I think that perhaps what most people who haven't served in the military or didn't serve in the Korean War and before, one of the things they may remember most is that famous movie, the Patton movie, which I think won the Oscar that year. And George C. Scott so vividly portrayed General Patton's life. And they recall there was a very famous moment in there where the U.S. forces were attacked in the Ardennes Forest. It became known as the Battle of the Bulge by the Wehrmacht, the German soldiers, that last bitter cold winter before the end of the war in Europe in April of 45. But in any event, the U.S. Airborne Division, the 101st Airborne Division, incidentally from headquartered here in Kentucky at Fort Campbell, was cut off and surrounded at Bastogne, and they were going to be destroyed, and there was no way for the rest of the Third Army to reach them, even though, because the weather was absolutely horrid. I mean, we're talking deep snow drifts, a terrible overcast. You couldn't have the air cover that you would need to advance against the Panzer Division. And it was the meteorologists, were forecasting another 4 or 5 days, at which time the 101st would be obliterated. Patton asked his chaplain to prepare an appropriate prayer, asking for the lifting of the weather so that the next day they could launch the attack and relieve the besieged division of airborne division up at Bastogne. And the chaplain prepared such a prayer, and Patton prayed that prayer in front of his entire staff and many of his officers, and prayed that prayer fervently. The next morning, the forecasters were wrong. The weather was clear. The air cover was provided. The Third Army advanced successfully up the road and broke through the German lines and relieved Bastogne before the critical crossroads fell, and they were at the very heart of the German attack, and the victory was given to the Third Army and General Patton, and he always gave credit for that to God. And I'm just saying that that betrayal was the standard. I mean, George Washington praying at Valley Forge, which we all know, certainly no one suggested that the Founding Fathers would run over and suggest he has no business praying at Valley Forge in the dark winter of 1776. Well, in any event, in the spring, in May of...
I'm going to ask you just to hold that thought, because we're going to bring a couple of stations right back in with us just now. Well, our guest this afternoon is Colonel Ron Ray, and we're talking about the attack on prayer in the military. And, of course, they have a prayer with meals at Virginia Military Institute. They have prayers, or many times even a cadet-led prayers at the various military institutions, the Air Force Institution, the Navy, the Army. And all of this is under attack today by the Anti-Christian Lawyers Union, these bigots who would... They're not interested in prayer. They're really interested in destroying the very foundations of this nation, knowing full well that our freedoms come from God. This is the only nation that there has ever been that said our freedom comes not from government, not from the king, not from the parliament. Our freedom comes from God, and that's why governments were instituted among men, to guarantee those God-given freedoms. Well, that's been forgotten. They don't teach that in schools anymore. They certainly never mention that in our major media, which is controlled by the same people who are part of this movement to disrupt and destroy what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave. So pick up the story about what's going on today as far as the attack on prayer in our institutions.
That's true, sir. And in about May of 2001, before the September 11th attack on New York and the Pentagon, the ACLU filed suit in Lynchburg, Virginia, claiming a violation of the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment and asking that the VMI cease having cadet-led prayer. Non-sectarian prayers were given every day at mealtime at VMI. And these were prayers very typical of the things that are being done at the Air Force Academy, West Point, the Naval Academy, the Coast Guard Academy. Not unlike the prayers we have throughout the military. In fact, they pray every day on our aircraft carriers. One of the most dangerous things we do, even in peacetime, is launch and retrieve high-performance aircraft in all weather, 24 hours a day, aboard our deployed aircraft carriers. And so it's a very important matter, and it's a matter of great encouragement for leaders to lead in prayer before they lead in dangerous training or going in harm's way in defense of the Constitution and defense of our way of life. So the ACLU filed this lawsuit in Lynchburg, where there was a Clinton-appointed federal judge. There was a cross motions for summary judgment, and the motion was granted for the ACLU after an oral argument, and a judgment was entered, an injunction was entered to cease and desist that prayer at VMI. Very soon after that, while it was being appealed by the Attorney General of Virginia, I knew about the case, but I got a call from an assistant attorney general in Richmond and asked for my assistance during the appeal. They were familiar with the work we'd done on the biblical foundations of the armed forces, Ten Commandments, and our success in Stephan versus Perry, in which our amicus brief for the Naval Aviation Foundation had been decisive in actually upholding the first principle of the Navy and keeping homosexuality from being judicially approved at the Naval Academy. And they encouraged me to consider filing a friend of the court brief, which we agreed to do, and representing the Coalition of American Veterans and the Naval Aviation Foundation, whose chairman is the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Tom Moore, who passed away last week, and who'll be interred with full military honors in Arlington in about 10 days. I hope to be in Washington when that occurs. At 91, but he was fighting still, and very interested in what was important about this country. The appeal to Richmond, we filed a historic brief that I took all the way back to the founding period, looking at the, we discovered 67 prayer books had been distributed to American fighting forces in times of peril, usually wartime, from the War of Independence, the War of 1812, the Mexican War, the War between the States, the Spanish-American War, the First World War, the Second World War, the Korean War. And by the time the Vietnam War came along, there was much less of this, and it was just a matter of custom, I think. A lot of people became accustomed. Our society began to secularize after Engle versus Vital, that took prayer out of the public schools in 1962. 63, the Bible was taken out, and I think the society, many people made some false assumptions, but it wasn't as prevalent during the Vietnam era and after as it was before. But there'd been no suggestion that there was anything wrong with the continuation of prayer, unit-led prayer, in our military. And so we filed the brief and found some things that were absolutely stunning to me. We looked at every inaugural address by every sitting president, every president who gave an inaugural address, 100% of them. Did just what the Declaration of Independence did. They all recognized the existence of our Creator, as you pointed out at the beginning of the show. The Creator is from whom our rights and our liberties come from, and that the purpose of government, as the Declaration says, is to preserve the liberties that come from God. And they, each president acknowledged God's existence as Creator, acknowledge that America was only possible because of the government of God or the divine providence of God, and each president, and some of my friends are surprised to hear that even Bill Clinton twice used both prayer and petition in the occasion of his inaugural address to ask for the continuation of God's blessings and good government and divine providence on the incoming administration. So 100%. So here we have this anomaly. The greatest national security failure in American history, September 11th, 2001, and the President of the United States calling on the American people to pray, leaders in Congress calling on the American people to pray, many local, state and local politicians, God bless America is being said, and while that's going on, the ACLU is prosecuting this appeal vigorously after September 11th. They didn't slow down, they didn't miss a beat. The bodies were being buried, and they were prosecuting this case to take prayer out of the armed forces. And we're deploying forces to Afghanistan, and they're pressing this claim. And like I said, the anomaly of the president calling us to prayer and a federal judge ordering the VMI cadets to cease praying is more than ironic. It's tragic.
Well, you know, I think the most interesting thing, Colonel, is a recent poll that was done by CNN and USA Today. And they polled people whether or not they agreed with Judge Roy Moore in his effort to publicly display the Ten Commandment Monument there in Mobile, Alabama. 77% of the American people believe that Judge Roy Moore was absolutely right and the justices and the judges and the court system is wrong. Now, I say that shows we got a lot of people with good common sense here. They just don't understand that the judges know exactly what they're doing. They've been put there for judicial activism to erode the very religious foundation of this country. But the thing that is most encouraging to me is the average individual who really doesn't know the history of the infiltration of our courts by people who were placed there with a political agenda in mind, they still know their gut feeling is that this is a religious country, that we should be displaying the Ten Commandments, and the Ten Commandments are the basis of our law, and Judge Roy Moore is absolutely right. And I'll tell you, the other side is furious with all of their control of the media and their control of education and their control of television that they haven't been able to convince the American people that we're not a Christian nation. I think that really shows that the spirit of the American and American freedom is still blazing there in the hearts of an awful lot of our people.
Well, I think you're right, and isn't it interesting that the Declaration makes the point that all legitimate government, all legitimate government, rests on the consent of the governed, and that's informed consent. And as you say, in the face of basically a century of propaganda, certainly we know going back to 1915, before America was drawn into World War One, that there was a growing control of the newspapers and eventually the media in this country. And despite all of that, the good work on, I think, talk radio has a lot to do with that. I know you've had our mutual friend David Barton on before, and David's done a really wonderful work the last 12, 15 years of pointing out to people America's, what we call America's godly history and heritage. In point of fact, you made a very good point. The Supreme Court, on four separate occasions, between 1844 and as recently as 1931, during the Hoover administration, before Franklin Roosevelt came into office, held and used the phrase that America, because its laws are based on the Old and New Testament, called America, properly termed it a Christian nation. The most important of those cases was a unanimous case on February the 29th, 1892, majority opinion by Josiah David Brewer. And if any of your readers don't have that or access to it, they should read that case, because it's really a history citing dozens and dozens and dozens of precedents. And it actually says that these and a mass of other organic utterances, official determinations of various branches of our government, they said there's not a single dissonant voice from 1492, when the continents were discovered here, to 1892, a period of 400 years, there wasn't a single dissident voice proclaiming otherwise than America was a Christian nation. That's a phenomenal thing. So this is all an effort that's come since 1892, and certainly right prior to World War One, and it's gained momentum. And your listeners may have heard of Paul Fisher's book. I know you carry it, and you should certainly tell them to get a hold of Original Intent by David Barton, and maybe Paul Fisher's book Behind the Lodge Door, which talk about the takeover of secret societies taking over and their influence on the Supreme Court in the period of time 1941 to 1971. But the coming back to the VMI case, we presented a history of prayer in the armed forces as an appendix to our brief, and the brief is entirely online. I recommend your listeners to get a history lesson that will make them proud to be an American and proud of their armed forces history. Look at the appendix in our brief that was filed in the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond, and it's at First Principles Press, LESprinciplespress.org.
FirstPrinciplesPress.org, right.
.org. Right. And they can download the two briefs and the history surrounding the case and understand that the one area, Stan, and most of our admirals and generals today, most of the officers in our armed forces, most of the service secretaries and the undersecretaries in the Department of Defense do not really understand that the one place in our life that the Supreme Court has not interfered with is the military standards. They've deferred to our uniformed military on what they think is important for our military.
All right, just hold right there. We'll be back in just a moment with Colonel Ron Ray. A very important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working within organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
Hello, this is health journalist Bill Sardi. By the time you reach the retirement years, the average American will be taking 7 different prescription medications. Wouldn't it be nice to stay healthy and avoid taking all those pills? One unusual molecule has been shown to be effective in maintaining health, allicin, the active ingredient in fresh garlic. You won't find much allicin in regular store-bought garlic pills, but you will in Alimax, the only 100% pure allicin garlic extract now being imported from Britain. Call 866-405-4000 to learn more about Alimax. That's 866-405-4000. Alimax.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just tell you about some of the items which I think would be so vitally important for you to get today. And one of them would be our 4-tape set on Skull and Bones. It would appear that we're going to have a two-way race between George W. Bush, who was a Skull and Bonesman, and John Kerry, who was a Skull and Bonesman. You have to understand that there are not that many Bonesmen in the United States. But these are the people, of course, who rule, part of the ruling class. They control the CIA. They control the Council on Foreign Relations. They control banking. They can control industry. And, of course, it would appear that they seem to have a monopoly on government. Certainly the president's father was a member of Skull and Bones. His grandfather was a member of Skull and Bones. But you really need to understand what this organization is all about. Our 4-tape set on Skull and Bones is unique. We also have the book, The American Establishment, by Professor Sutton, The Fleshing Out of Skull and Bones, by Chris Mulligan, and then we actually have the material from the Skull and Bones itself. We got from Charlotte Isabey, whose father was and grandfather were in Skull and Bones, and you'll actually see the list of all the names of all the people in Skull and Bones. That's the syllabus, the Skull and Bones syllabus, and membership list names, and so many of the people in key positions in our government have been involved with Skull and Bones. So you can get all of these items by giving us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. But let me suggest Alexandra Robbins' excellent book, The Secrets of the Tomb. And Alexandra Robbins went around and interviewed a number of people from Skull and Bones. Now, they gave, in my estimation, a great deal of false information. In other words, this was a conscious effort to cover and confuse the what's going on, the truth about Skull and Bones and its occult foundation. But you'll get enough information out of her book, and then, of course, if you listen to our 4-tape set, you can begin to put the whole story together and understand that this is a secret society, that it goes back to the time of the Illuminati back in 1832 in Germany. So call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR right now and request these items. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, our guest this afternoon, Colonel Ron Ray, and we're talking about the attack on the prayer in our military institutions. And I think that you have to put this into its proper perspective. There is an attack on Christianity, or in Judaism, traditional Judaism and Christianity. Here in America today, it's really very effective, and a lot of the information that's being put out is being designed to promote anti-Semitism, because, of course, you get these very prominent Jewish people, and they get up and they scream against the Christians. And we see this, of course, the attack on Mel Gibson's film, but we see this also in the attack on prayer in our military institutions. It's really very clever. It's really totally diabolical. But there always has been a conspiracy against God. It's described in Jeremiah 9:11. It's described, or 11:9, I should say, Jeremiah 11:9, and Ezekiel 22:25. And it's the same conspiracy. It's always been there, a conspiracy against God. So would you want to pick up with that thought, Colonel?
Well, I will, and I think it's interesting. I was saying before your break, and I concur on the books you mentioned. I think Tony Sutton's work will be very important to take a good look at. But what was interesting was the most Americans, most lawyers, most commissioned officers, even the senior officers, do not realize that they hold the key. The senior military uniformed officers, what they determine is necessary in terms of standards for recruitment, personnel policies, training standards, the kind of equipment we need, what we need to prepare our forces, their combat readiness, the standards that we would apply. What they determine is necessary is the most essential thing, and the court has continually deferred from the founding period right down to 1986, the last time the Supreme Court had a military case before it, and even in the face of an attack by the ACLU and others under the First Amendment, the Religion Clause of the First Amendment, they held that the uniformity, the subordination, the virtue, honor, patriotism, the standards of the military govern even somebody who wanted to wear a yarmulke indoors, an Orthodox Jewish major wanted to wear a yarmulke indoors in his Air Force uniform at work, and the uniformity means everybody wears the same uniform, and the court said, we're not going to substitute our judgment. We're going to defer to the judgment of the uniform military leadership that uniformity is important for a successful military, and we're not going to interfere with that, and we recognize, it'd be no surprise, that the military, this is what they said, the military is by necessity a specialized society directly apart from the civilian society. The military must insist upon respect for duty and discipline without any counterpart in the civilian life in order to prepare and perform its vital national security role. And therefore, they deferred. And sadly, I found this out in the fight on homosexuals in the military and women in combat, that oftentimes we fought on the wrong ground. We played like equal opportunity, like there was some right to serve in the military. There is no right. All of our service in the military is selective service. So when the military determines in an unbroken line that the spiritual life of the soldier is essential, and that the unit leader leading in prayer before he leads in battle is a practice that's essential to our success. In fact, in my research, I was stunned to find out that one of the liberal social science institutions went out into the field to study what made men fight and what gave them courage and how did they sustain themselves, and they were hoping to prove that they fought for their buddies. We heard so much of that in the Vietnam and post-Vietnam era. What this liberal group found out is that this, nearly 80% of the soldiers said the thing that sustained them, both in Europe, the Mediterranean, North Africa, and up in the Pacific, this was a real solid piece of science that was done in 44 and 45 and was published after the war. It said prayer was what sustained our fighting forces. And so we have the proof of the practice, we have the proof of the social science that this is an important ingredient. This goes to the very heart. Even George Marshall, and you and I both know there are a lot of things, unseemly, untold things about George Marshall. George Marshall said that the spiritual life of the soldier is more important than his equipment. And I would count on a man who's a man of prayer as well as a man of action. And he said that repeatedly while he was a chief of staff of the Army. He said it when he was Secretary of Defense. And of course he was a Secretary of State. And he was the number one graduate of a class from the Virginia Military Institute, and I put forward a lot of that information. Interestingly, the Attorney General of Virginia was reluctant to put out the military necessity argument. So we made the only argument that was heard in Richmond, and now we've asked the Supreme Court to overturn the Court of Appeals, which ruled 3-0 that prayer should be taken out of VMI.
And of course, this is an entirely different approach. It's a winning approach. It's one that I don't think could be ignored by the courts. And I would feel far better if the Attorney General was putting it forward. But at least it'll be put forward by first principles, by Colonel Ron Ray and those who work with him. So hang in there. We'll be back in just a moment to proceed. And of course, we'll welcome your calls at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Set on the JFK assassination includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination. A 2-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of the American president. And then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out. And if you listen to this 4-tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. 5 HIV War and ask for the JFK assassination tapes. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I want to mention a couple of things we carry. One of them, of course, is the Big Berkey water filters. We have, of course, the traditional Big Berkey is made out of stainless steel. Its filters are ceramic, packed with activated carbon. We carry the Berkey Light, which is Lexan transparent. They're both the same size, but the Berkey Light filters are what we call black Berkey. There's only two of them in contrast to the four. They work much more efficiently than the Big Berkey filters, but they have to be replaced every 2 years or so. But both the Big Berkey and the Berkey Light can have special post filters put on to take out the fluoride. The Big Berkey is $239.95. The Berkey Light's $199.95. The Big Berkey is available in every state but California and Iowa. The Berkey Light is available in every state but California. Why not go to our website, see pictures of them, and then call us at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. They're great to have around if there's an emergency. And then, of course, we want to mention that we carry something called Phenopoly, which is a program designed to teach you and your children and your grandchildren how to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically. Phonics is the basis of learning how to read, and unfortunately, there have been some wicked people who gained control of our educational system, specifically John Dewey and his followers at Columbia University, and they introduced a system they knew did not work because they wanted to dumb down our children. Now, if you look and see what's happening to reading scores in America and the amount of money we spend on reading, you have come to one conclusion. They spend an awful lot of money to intentionally dumb down our children. Well, you can reverse that. You can teach them how to read phonetically and spell and pronounce words in 16 hours with Phonopoly. It's a fun game. It's played like Monopoly. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And the game is Phonopoly. Well, Dr. Stan back here, our guest is Colonel Ron Ray. We're talking about the attack on our military, and it's the very foundation of our military, because if you destroy the religious foundation of a military organization, you destroy that organization itself. But, Colonel, certainly your argument that the military is different, that the people in the military don't have the same constitutional rights other people do, do you think that this argument will hold?
Well, it's interesting that the lower court judge, Clinton-appointed judge, during the oral argument, asked the Solicitor General of Virginia, what about military necessity? And he continued making his argument under the religion clauses of the First Amendment, never really said, well, of course, that applies, and then went on. He hadn't made the case. And it was interesting that when we were ready to file our petition in support of the writ of certiorari in the Supreme Court, there was some resistance to the fact that we went into great detail about the prayer the night before the Battle of Newmarket, where Captain Preston actually led the Corps of Cadets in prayer before these young boys had been thrown in by the Confederate General Breckinridge, happened to be from Kentucky, and he said, you know, when they were losing the battle and they were the Corps Reserve, he said, may God have mercy on my soul, we'll send the boys in. There was a wonderful prayer that was historically recorded. The cadets went into the battle in Newmarket and captured the Union the guns, lost 10 cadets killed in action, many wounded, and it's really the very core of what VMI is all about. They didn't want that story in the brief. The story of that history, somehow they believed that the people on the Supreme Court would be so offended by the notion that there was any connection with the Confederate States of American history that prayer would point it out, and that there were people on the Supreme Court. I said, you mean they're so bigoted that they're just against the history, and they would hate VMI because it actually the young men had served and defend Virginia. So we run into this politically correct business everywhere, and we run into the censorship of history everywhere, Stan, that people don't know the history. They've been lied to. They've been misled. And we salute Radio Liberty and the work that you do. Like the work we try to do at First Principles, and try to show them that a page of history is worth a volume of logic. And we hear the logic all the time, we hear the talking heads all the time, but you have to have the history true, and the victors write the history. And the man, the Marxist-Leninist always said that he who controls the past controls the future. and can prevail in the present.
And he's certainly done an excellent job of rewriting our history, taking over, rewriting our textbooks, rewriting our encyclopedia. And that's all covered in the book we carry called Foundations, Their Power and Influence, pointing out how the Great Tax Exempt Foundation simply rewrote American history. Very important book, and it is available from Radio Liberty. Well, have you had any help from the Ashcroft, John Ashcroft's Justice Department in this lawsuit you're bringing?
No, and I think that it's really interesting that, as you probably know, that the Bush administration and the Solicitor General of the United States didn't participate in Lawrence versus Texas. Lawrence versus Texas is the case that struck down the Texas sodomy law, overturned Bowers versus Hardwick from Georgia, and basically said that the sodomy statutes of the states, the criminal sodomy statutes that go all the way back to the founding period, are unconstitutional suddenly. And even at least one of the, I think Sandra Day O'Connor changed the vote that she cast in 1986 in Bowers versus Hardwick. But the point I'm making is that they did not do it. And the military necessity doctrine was also decided in 1986 by the very same court in Goldman versus Weinberger, Secretary Weinberger, the same year by the same court that decided Bowers versus Hardwick, which was overturned in Lawrence versus Texas in June of last year. So we're concerned about this, but there's some real hope here. Remember one thing. What's the significance of the VMI case? The ACLU and their allies have attacked the Citadel. The Citadel had been through long and expensive litigation with the Justice Department during the Clinton years. They took out prayer they just were going to let to see what happened in the VMI case. They have then turned on the Naval Academy, which is in the Fourth Circuit. In other words, it's in Maryland. The cases in Maryland are part of the Fourth Circuit, where this case in Virginia is. So the because of our research was passed out by Admiral Moore and his colleagues to the members of the board of Naval Academy and to the chief of chaplains there, they knew they had a solid historical foundation and could say no. Now, they gave the same answer that General McAuliffe did at Bastogne when the Germans had him surrounded. They asked for surrender, and he said nuts. And
the Germans didn't know what to make of nuts. That's not a term that you ordinarily use in the German language.
Germans didn't know how to translate that, and the good Lord actually gave them some hours of time they wouldn't have had, because the Germans were trying to figure out what that response really meant. But it's a wonderful story because of the power of prayer. There are literally thousands of those stories in our military history. If you want to know that prayers were answered, the British officers that were fighting against the Continental Army in the War for American Independence were starting to record in their diaries that they could see the evidence of the government of God, the providence of God in favor of the colonies, in favor of the Continental Army, time after time after time, and began to reflect that demoralization, that God appeared to be on the side of the Continentals. And so there's no question that He is the Lord and the God of battles. This is the quote that General George C. Marshall said when he was the Chief of Staff of the Army, and he used this later. He said, "I look upon the spiritual life of the soldier as even more important than his physical equipment. His heart, the soldier's spirit, the soldier's soul are everything. Unless he is sustained such, he cannot be relied upon and will fail himself, his commander, and his country in the end." So this is a matter of the most important crisis. When I was in combat in Vietnam and training for combat in the jungles of Panama and in northern Norway and what have you, one of the things that would be said, and I think this has been true throughout American history, when they were going to talk about a truly hopeless mission, a hopeless unit or plane or ship or group of soldiers or Marines, if it was truly hopeless, they would always say that that outfit doesn't have a prayer. That was the phrase that was used to characterize their hopeless situation.
Well, if the ACLU has that their way, nobody will have a prayer.
Exactly, and official and public prayer. Now, I want to point out, see, a lot of people misunderstand when they read this in the paper. They think that somehow how can you restrict somebody's private individual prayer? Well, what we do privately and individually is not that significant in the military. I mean, you certainly can have private individual prayer, but it's the official and public unit-led prayer where the leader leads in prayer and then leads in battle, and there have been survey after survey and circumstance after circumstance where the confidence that's given to that young soldier, sailor, airman, marine, or guardsman when he sees his commanding officer lead him in prayer, the confidence that he's following a man of virtue, a man of integrity, a man that would not put him in harm's way unnecessarily, that he could be trusted. I mean, it's a confidence builder as well as the notion that invocation of the power of God Almighty and the creator of this country, the creator of the Declaration of Independence, is so essential. And so it's been really a great opportunity for us to get into the prayer. I just had no idea. It's interesting that my uncle was wounded at Anzio Beachhead, was with Patton in North Africa and in Sicily, and he carried a prayer book and lost his son on Aishima in the Battle for Okinawa, his only son, Eddie Ray. But he came home and was a doctor in the VA system and quite a patriot. But just before I went to Vietnam, he gave me his prayer book, inscribed it to me. He said, you know, a lot of the places you're probably going to go, there won't be a chaplain, there won't be a church, and you can hold your own via a GI service, is what he said in that. And I had that a book right near the bed, that prayer book. And when this call from the Attorney General came in, that prayer book caught my eye. And that's what, looking at that prayer book and the power of the prayers that were in there, there were collected prayers from the leading military and political figures of the 20th century. And these were powerful, manly prayers. Most of them prayed in the name of Jesus Christ. People like Dean Acheson, commandants of the Marine Corps, secretaries of the Navy, secretaries of war. President Hoover recommended the Lord's Prayer, President and Mrs. Hoover. So did Douglas MacArthur. And I read those prayers again, and that's what put me on to the notion of searching for the prayer books that had been given to our fighting forces in time of peril. And we uncovered, like I say, 67 prayer books. And the summary of those prayer books, and some of those typical prayers, this is really important, I think, for your listeners, some of the prayers would be there in that appendix. You can look at it, firstprinciplespress.org. And I've had occasion, since we did this work last year and this year, I've had occasion to be asking to lead in prayer in secular places, service organizations, Rotary Club, and that kind of thing. And when I stand up, I take that prayer book, the appendix of that brief with me, and I say, well, here's a prayer by General Bryant, who was superintendent of West Point, and was killed in action in Korea, and this is the prayer that he wanted distributed to the fighting forces in Korea. And I read his prayer, which is a very strong and manly prayer, in the name and glory of the Lord of all battles, Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. And I've never had anybody openly criticize me for such an overtly Christian prayer, because I'm praying a historic prayer that was distributed to our fighting forces in Korea by a man who was a general superintendent of West Point who lost his life in the Korean War.
Well, I think it's so important that people understand the tradition of prayer within our military and understand the attack is simply on God. It is on our military. It is on the very foundation of our society. And you know, you were talking about the British officers really beginning to write during the Revolutionary War about the influence of God. And they could see that actually God was, for one reason or another, favoring the enemy. And the story of Washington being able to take his army off of Long Island because of the inclement weather, they couldn't actually see them retreating. The story of the attack on Trenton there on Christmas Eve. The wonderful, wonderful stories that at one time were part of our history. They taught these things in school. They no longer teach them because, of course, the idea is to destroy the memory of the nation, destroy the history, and, of course, by so doing, to destroy the very foundation that men will be willing to fight and die for.
Hey, you see, when in the book of Revelations in the New Testament, it talks about overcoming Satan by two ways, the word of our testimonies and the blood of Jesus Christ, the blood of the Lamb. And the word of the testament, testimony is when you, these are testimonies. These are testimonies of somebody in harm's way who called upon the Lord, and the Lord answered and moved, and that instead of it coming out wrong, it came out right. Eddie Rickenbacker's prayer is in this book. Many people don't know the story of the great world ace of World War One, who was wrecked at sea, and a number of them were in a raft, and it was days and days and days, and they were sustained by prayer. And after they prayed the first time, I think a seagull or something, and they landed. It's a fantastic story, and the story in the context of that, of the prayer that he prayed, is right there. And there's each one of those is a testimony. The bulletproof George Washington, that story is a testimony of Washington was ambushed when he was with the, in the French and Indian War. He was with the British forces and was the all the officers in that ambush, the French and the Indians ambushed him. Every officer, British and English, was either killed or wounded or had his horse shot out from under him, except George Washington. And many years later, Washington revisited the spot, and one of the chiefs who had been in command of the ambushing forces against Washington heard that George Washington, the man who got, who he said, the man who God wouldn't let die, he wanted to go meet the man, and this is what he said to Washington. He said to Washington, he said, I personally fired my rifle at you, and I'm a pretty good shot. I fired my rifle at you more than a dozen times without effect. And when I realized that, I turned to my braves and I asked them, I told them, I ordered them not to shoot at you because God had a very special plan for you and you were not going to be touched. Washington took his coat off after that battle and there were bullet holes through his coat, through his wig, through his hat, not a single wound or scratch, and even his horse was not hit in that. And so you hear that testimony as a soldier who goes in harm's way even in training. Life, and death circumstances, whether it's airborne or scuba or whatnot, and those kind of things encourage you. They really do inspire you, and those testimonies are important. And that we would be deprived of those at a time of national security let you know that these groups that are pressing this really do not wish America or its military well.
And of course, at one time, George Washington was first in war and first in peace and first in the hearts of his countrymen. He was really just almost worshipped by the American people. We used to celebrate his birthday, but of course, they did away with the celebration of Washington's birthday. And then, of course, they introduced the birthday of Martin Luther King. The whole idea, of course, is to deprive us of a belief in the traditions of America. And they've done such a great job of it, just a little at a time, a little here, a little there, and now, of course, they're attacking the very foundation of our military and of our military's really ability to function effectively in wartime or in crisis. So, you know, I think it's wonderful that you're out there on the front lines of this battle. When will this case be going to the Supreme Court?
Well, the documents are all filed. The petition for cert was filed. Our brief in support of the petition was filed on the middle of January, and we were told by the clerk of the Supreme Court to look for some ruling on whether the court will hear this case in May or June.
But what about you? You said, of course, that the Bush administration is not backing you.
No, they're not participating in this, and as I told you, they did not participate in really the most important case. Even many people have said Lawrence versus Texas is more important to this country than the Roe versus Wade decision was, and in terms of a really attack on morality and the virtue that founds this country. And there are now all the forces that were at work in 1992 and 93 to homosexualize the military are again at work, using Lawrence versus Texas and saying the military is no different. Lawrence versus Texas should govern the military, and there's not any resistance that I can find, and I'm hopeful to be able to encourage some leaders in both in and out of the Pentagon, civilian and military, that there is a basis, and show them the military necessity, history, and foundation that what the military leaders say, whether it's prayer or virtue, exemplary conduct, a sodomy statute, whatever, that those standards which are essential to train, equip, select, promote, and fight, will not be interfered with by the court if the military leadership will stand firm. But so many of them, like so many in the church, don't know the truth. They don't understand our history, and they don't understand many of the times we lose battles that we don't appear in, and many times we fight on the wrong ground because we're ignorant.
Well, we're just about out of time. Do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners today, other than the fact that everybody should go to First Principles Press?
Well, I think that would be a really wonderful thing to do. You'll find some things in there. At the 150th anniversary of the Constitution, they published a book, The Story of the Constitution, during the Roosevelt administration, and the quotes in there from that as late as the mid-1930s, Christianity was alive and well in the hearts of those that ran our government.
Well, I still think it's alive and well in the hearts of most Americans, although I think the church is under attack today. Well, anyway, God bless you, Colonel. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll look forward to having you with us in the not-too-distant future.
I sure appreciate it, Stan, and keep up the good work at Radio Liberty.
You too. Bye-bye, sir.
Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I want to mention the Institute of the Constitution. Why is that important? Because you need to understand our Constitution. You didn't learn it in school. Most Americans don't know the difference between a republic and a democracy. They don't understand that our elected representatives are violating the law almost every time they meet because they are restricted in what they can do by the chains of the Constitution, as Jefferson had said so well. In matters of politics, speak not to me of confidence in men, but bind them down from mischief by the chains of the Constitution. Because Jefferson believed, as did John Locke, that government governs best that governs the least. And we were to deal with matters of life, liberty, and property at the state and the local level, but never give the federal officials the ability to regulate everything, because that's where tyranny would come from. And so you need to understand our Constitution. The Institute of the Constitution is a series of 12 lectures by Dr. John Ijmo and a couple of lectures by David Barton. And it comes complete with a kit. And, of course, all the questions you're supposed to ask are in the kit. All the answers to the questions are in the kit. And all you have to do is host an Institute of the Constitution. Call 410-760-9068. That's 410-760-9068. And ask for a kit on the Institute of the Constitution, and then get together with the people at your church or in your neighborhood or wherever it can be. But all across America, and I will tell you, this is a new phenomenon. People are setting up the Institutes of the Constitution. Several are going out every single day somewhere in the country, and these institute kits can be used over and over again. We have to know the foundation of our freedom. If we don't know where we came from, how will we understand why we're where we are today? And, of course, how will we be able to stop us from this nation from being destroyed? Call the Institute of the Constitution, get a kit, and start one of those programs just as soon as you possibly can. And then, of course, we want, of course, to also mention that the Miracle 2 soap products, and we carry Miracle 2 soap. We believe it's very effective. I've used it for well over 2 years. I wouldn't be without my moisturizing soap because it's helped a rash I have. And we can't make any medical claims for Miracle 2, but we will tell you that many of the people who use the products to give us all sorts of glowing reports on it. And once you've used it, you don't want to be without it. And they tell us it helps acne and it helps skin rashes, and I know Joyce Riley uses it with the veterans, and actually she gives it to the veterans free of charge, because, and that's one reason we get everything we do from Joyce, because she's helping the veterans who are, of course, victims of the Gulf War illness. There are many, many uses for the Miracle 2 soap products. There's a soap, a moisturizing soap, a lotion, a gel, and a neutralizer solution. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for a selection. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will realize that we have a different message than most ministries, and that you'll want to become part of the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And you do that by giving us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then we hope, of course, that many of you will tell others about our programs, that you'll go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, where, of course, you can listen to our programs 5 hours live every day, and then you can listen on the archive programs. And, of course, there are connections to the other networks we're on so that you can listen to us 5 hours a day. You won't get much accomplished, but you'll begin to develop that understanding of what's happening and the spiritual forces behind what's happening. If you don't understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, cultural, economic, educational battlefield, you can't understand what's happening, and there really are secret societies. They've been here since the beginning of time, and they're manifest today in organizations like the CFR. And you say, well, the CFR is a secret. I can read about that in the newspaper. But 20 years ago, you couldn't. They never mentioned the CFR in the controlled medium. And, of course, the CFR is a front for the secret society Cecil Rhodes created back in 1891. And that's covered in a book called Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, written by Professor Carol Quigley. And the book was so effective in bringing out the secrets of the secret organization that Cecil Rhodes created that somebody bought up the Macmillan Company and destroyed the place of the first half of Professor Quigley's book so it couldn't be reprinted. And if you doubt that story, we have an interview with Professor Quigley in our Secret Government, four-tape set where you'll hear Professor tell you that quickly, tell you the very story. Remember, Professor Quigley was the Bill Clinton's mentor, who Bill Clinton mentioned when he accepted the Democrat nomination for the presidency back in July 16th, 1992. Well, anyway, we have so much information available through Radio Liberty. You'll find much of it at our website at radioliberty.com. You'll find a great deal of information in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. If you haven't written it, have you read the book, you really should get it. You can get the book, or you can get the video, or you can get the audio tape, or you can get them all together as the Brotherhood of Darkness special for $29.95. And when you've read the book and watched the video, I believe that your life will change forever. You'll suddenly realize what's really going on and what's motivating these people on the other side, these people who hate God and would take God out of our society and our schools, out of our military. They're part of a conspiracy against God. But what motivates them? Why, there's a secret that's been passed down through the ages by the sages of the mystery religions. And if you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you'll understand what that secret is. So give us
Thank you.